officials, our police department, our fire department, have, if it's a key fob, how will our services be allowed into those gates to manage traffic, or if there's a boat fire, or if there's a disagreement? Do we have access? Will our public officials have access to the gate?
It's a requirement of the Fire Prevention Code.
I understand.
And
I'm asking.
So they will have access.
And our police department will.
We can provide the police department access. There will be the ability. There'll be ability to walk around those gates. There'll be pedestrian access.
Right. Yeah. And the only reason I'm going with this, again, you know, we kind of laugh about it, but with the 17 parking spots, and probably never will be full, hopefully. That's what we're all counting on. But if it is, who will manage that if there's people parking outside the parking spaces?
The owner of the property will be managing anybody who's breaking their rules.
Okay. So if they're not, would that be a citation from Ponce Inlet?
Well, I think, first of all, as a business owner, if he has a customer that is breaking the rules, I think he's probably going to have a conversation with them and politely ask them to, you know, comply in future. I don't think he's going to be calling the police and asking them to cite his customers. But
I get it. You know. But the reason I'm asking these questions is because the biggest concern that we have is not just the marina. It's the traffic and how we manage the traffic. There's a lot of people here, and again, I sat through, you know, the first presentation, and 9 times out of 10, every resident said, we don't care about the marina, it's okay. But they're concerned about changing their livelihood, changing the traffic patterns. All I'm trying to do is ask the questions to make sure there's procedures in place.
This is commercial property. This is about the lowest traffic generator we could possibly place on this property. Mm-hmm. So,
and I totally get that. I really do.
Right.
But I have to ask the questions to make sure we make the right decision for our citizens, too. So, you answered that. I'm good. Thank you.
You're good. Okay. Bill?
Your questions were asked. You heard me about the system and my concern of the entrance, the pedestrian entrance. I know Patty and Darren and you will be able to sit down and figure out something to make it safe for those people that are pedestrians that don't get right over by the e-bikes.
Yeah. Now, you know, as you know, we have the parking lot is not immediately adjacent to...
Oh, I know. I know. Believe me, it doesn't matter.
So there's quite a bit of stacking, you know, inside the property. You know,
but that's my biggest concern. Skip talked to the concern. When I listened to the concerns of the people at the planning board meeting, you worked very hard to try and explain them that until it actually happens, we don't know. But that's why the town is being proactive in looking at the parking passes for the people that live on Ocean Way compared to the people that might be parking there illegally. And that's going to be a wait and see. I mean, bottom line, you don't want to hear it's going to be a wait and see, but it may be put on the Ponce Inlet, the police department. But I have a feeling in your contract, you're going to have all that information is going to be there before the people purchase, because this is going to be a big boat facility, and these people will understand the right's wrong, and I'm hoping with that they'll follow it, because you've met the LUDC and comprehensive plan requirements.
Yes, we have.
And I know what the gentleman had to go through previously by not doing that. It was a $5.5 million lawsuit, I think.
Thank you. Councilman Gary.
Quick question. You mentioned standpipes, and I had a discussion with the fire chief earlier today, and he wasn't sure that they were there. And will there be firefighting standpipes for water supply on all of the dock walkways?
That's an absolute requirement of the Florida Fire Prevention Code.
Okay.
Okay, so is there any other information either party wishes to share, either Patty, or is there anything else you would like to share with us at this time?
Not this time. I'd like an opportunity, if you have further questions after you've talked to people. Obviously, I'd like an opportunity to respond to any issues that I think would be appropriate to respond.
Thank you. And that would be my plan, is after we open this to public questions, when they're through with the questions, I am going to ask if you wouldn't mind coming back up if there's anything you wish to respond. And I know that you have your traffic engineer here as well. So is there anyone else? You have your traffic engineer and you and the applicant himself. Is there any other witnesses?
No other witnesses.
Okay. So thank you so much. Because now we're going to move to the part that is the opportunity for our public to speak. 5 minutes each person, and I'm going to ask you to place your name and address on the record, okay? And I see that Mr. Bullard's hand is up. Come on.
Robert Bullard, 4802 South Peninsula Drive, Ponce Inlet. Mark has lived a trial by fire as a planner to get to where he is today, and I appreciate the fact that he stuck it out in Volusia County, even though he was not here for a while. I have several questions, and these are really just questions. Are the slips, and I guess Mark can answer these questions, are the slips on submerged land lease or...
Robert, if I may, I don't, our preference is for him to not jump up and answer them, but we'll write it down, he'll write it down. Okay, just ask your questions, that would be great.
Okay, here we go. Are the slips on a submerged land lease or submerged lands owned by the owner of the upland property? In addition to the standpipes, is there a fire hydrant next to or on the property? Are there any picnic facilities contemplated for the property? Are there any limitations for the use of food trucks or access to the adjacent properties of food trucks to be used by persons using the slip facilities? Or in relation to the same topic, food boats pulling into the slip, which may be rented by one of the boats which are owned by one of the renters of the slips. Are there any water or electric service connections directly to each dock? Get my glasses back on. What are the passive security features, cameras, lighting? Is there going to be any owner representation available for regular surveillance of what's going on the property, daily, weekly, or whatever? And to what extent is that going to be documented as to what is observed going on the property? Is there 24/7 vehicular access through this gate structure to anyone who has the ability to get through the gate? Can the vessel owners individually transport fuel containers from their vehicles to the docks and fuel their boats while in the docks, as opposed to taking the gasoline in the containers out to sea with them as additional fuel supply? What are the facilities' overboard security features and safety features? Somebody falls in the water, how do they get out? Do they have to clamber up a rocky, oyster-laden shoreline? Are there going to be any overboard steps? Are there going to be any lifesaver rings that can be tossed out? What sort of things are there for that purpose? And what are the owner's requirements and means for securing the site? And that mean by not only the site uplands itself, but the boats and the docks themselves during a severe storm event. What is the procedure, to what extent has that procedure been made available to us? And I could go on and on, but I'm going to sit down and see what.
All right, thank you, Robert. What we're going to do is listen to our public, and then I will turn it back over to the applicant. Is that you? You couldn't get them all?
I draft 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 Mr. Bullock questions.
Okay. We'll do the best we can. Is there anyone else who would like to come up and speak? Please do so. Yes.
Good afternoon. Mark Eamon, 101 Ocean Way. This morning, quick story. I was out on my walk, and I was just wondering, how many people live on Ocean Way? I don't know the answer, but I do know there's 37 houses. I counted them. So if you figure three people per house, that's about 110 people. So what's the point in that? Well, we're going to add 34 boat slips to the number of slips that currently exist. I think there's, say, 10. So that puts like 40 to 45 total boat slips. And as you pointed out, Mr. White, there's only 17 parking spots. So, you know, my kids park out on the street because we have a kind of a traffic situation in our own driveway. My concern is that these boat owners and tourists and, you know, beachgoers are going to be parking all along Ocean Way because there's nowhere to park. And what happens if the power goes out and that gate doesn't open? Where are they going to go? And the answer is, you know, we're going to try to park on the north end of the B2 up there. But what we need, as a homeowner, I need some teeth. I need you guys to clarify with the police department what the rules are. I mean, can these folks legally park in front of my house? I don't think they can, but we need the ability to call a towing company and say, you know, get the heck out of here. And I guarantee after the second or third boat owner who gets towed away, it's not going to happen anymore. So, you know, maybe they meet all the requirements for the LUDC, but there's a big question mark. On a busy, you know, holiday weekend, you can't tell me how many cars. It's a fact that we don't know how many cars are going to be parked or try to park at the marina. And so I guarantee you they're going to take the path of least resistance. They're going to try to park right there on Sailfish. And we just need some teeth, okay?
Mark, we might be able to address some of this.
That would
right
be wonderful.
When,
I think if we can leave today with that guarantee, then I think it solves at least a lot of problems on Ocean Way. I'd prefer that you vote against it as it's currently depicted because I think it's better to go. I think it's better to approach the property from Front Street. I think you eliminate all these problems, including the safety ones. So anyway, that pretty much covers it. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Are there any other? Oh, yes. Yes. All right. Sharon. Hello, Sharon.
Sharon Lemieux, 4590 South Atlantic Avenue. I have two concerns. One that seems to be buried deeply in these reports is something that's really significant to me as far as why I live in Ponce Inlet and its historic significance, is addressing the major archaeological preservation of a tremendous prehistoric site. And I have a difficult time even reconciling the fact of building a code-qualified bathroom next to an ancient, possibly a sacred burial ground. There was an archaeological report done in 2004 of 109 pages. Breezing through them, it was imperative that this was to be protected at all costs, and it has to been buried within this feature, and I have I would really like that to be risen to the surface as far as how do we protect this at its most precious cost, because most of the significance of it and the people that it represents are buried there and don't have voice for themselves. I would like to be considered one of those voices in saying that our prehistoric history here in Florida is of utmost importance to me, and I would like to see that preserved as much as possible. The second issue I have is on this conclusion. Sailfish Drive is a scenic road that I find very beautiful. Drive quite often through it. How does one, with major construction and We do understand how construction can destroy an area. How does one restore it to its original once it has been damaged? And what are the processes of that in order to restore something that has been damaged during the course of this development? Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Elena?
Elena Richards, 54 Ocean Way. I actually was not going to speak today because I feel that I've had all of my questions answered, and I appreciate that from the city, but something was raised today, and it's an issue that I've been trying to get across to the city officials. And Joe, you raised that issue. Can the access come in through Front Street? The city keeps saying that we have to provide them with access. While we all agree we do, but as a registered paralegal who is very comfortable with reading codes, ordinances, statutes, and case law, the constitutional right is not the right to access. It is the constitutional right to access your property, but not at the most convenient spot. So what that means is that although the city needs to give access to provide access to these property owners, we don't have to provide it over Selfish. We can provide it across Front Street. We can provide it anywhere where the city feels it is a safer place for the community to provide it. And based upon all of the conversations we're having here, going across Selfish, down Ocean Way, is not the safest place for the city to provide access to this property. And constitutionally, yes, access can be provided, but it can go through Front Street if the city would like it to go that way.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Comfort.
Gary.
Good afternoon. My name is Gary Comfort. I'm at 85 Ocean Way Drive. First, I'd like to say I'm not against the marina itself. I'm just against the access point, and I'm going to explain why. I've emailed two letters to the town council or to the town. Hopefully, all of you have gotten them. I don't know if you've had time to review them. I just got responses from the town this morning myself. I do appreciate the time in taking those responses. They've given me some good information, too. However, one of the staff's recurring responses, and I've heard this all through this presentation right now, is that we have to allow access to Selfish because it's bordering a public road and nothing restricts it. And this is where I object and think they're wrong. I do think the ordinances restrict it from Selfish, as I'm going to explain. First, I've got to admit I'm not a lawyer. Okay, and I'm not an expert. I've only started looking at the town regulations, but I did spend 33 years as a federal regulator, and the first 13 years was doing license applications, similar to what the town does, on it, reviewing applications, looking at the regulations, and it can be difficult when the regulations aren't clear, which is more often than not. I then spent the last 20 years writing regulations, so again, I'm very familiar at looking at the history of regulations, understanding what they say, so that's where I'm coming from on this. So my first action was go look at the town resources, which are very good. They're all online, available to the public, which I appreciate. I looked at the development code, land development code. I looked at the resolutions that were in place that are referenced in the land development code. I looked at the town meeting minutes from way back when these things were developed. The big first surprise I had was that when they put the resolution for 2000-9, which puts Selfish as a scenic road, is not because of the Selfish Road. It is because it's the canopy that goes above. That's why there's a 15-foot parameter on each side. We are protecting the canopy, not the road. They'd even talked about it at that time, paving it over. They said, no, we can't do that because it's afraid we're going to hurt the roots. So when we're looking at all these regulations related to Selfish, we're not looking at the road. We're looking at that canopy and protection of that canopy. So in that mind, going on to the 2000 resolution for making it, one of the other things, Beach Street was already made a scenic road, paved road. It was for the same reason, for the canopy. But that was done a year before. When they did Selfish, they added a clause that's not in there. No commercial access, or no commercial activities in the protected zone is what it says specifically. And that's in Section 4E. Okay, it does say in Section 4F in both of them, you can't have any structures in the prohibited area. Okay. You look at the definition of structure in the ordinances for scenic roads, It basically says that's any building or construction, but it does give an exception for roads that are perpendicular, such as driveways and all, and fences. So the question for me that I go is, okay, why do they have this separate action that they put that says no commercial activities in that protected zone when they've already stopped, you know, structures and all in it? And so I can only read it as being because they're taking away the provisions that were provided in that definition. So they're saying you can't have a road in there, you can't have a fence, anything related to commercial cannot be in that protected area. That's number one. So now let's go to the land use development requirements. Those were developed basically three or four years after the scenic thing was put in and all. Basically on that one, they developed the riverfront overlay district zone. Now that zone, as we've seen, originally had two commercial properties that are adjacent to Sailfish. Now there's the one remaining. But these regulations only apply to that riverfront protection zone. So basically, we're running into a problem that the items in there that they put in a lot of restrictions on this riverfront development zone or overlay district that only apply to Sailfish. You look through the entire rest of the zoning regulations, there's not one mention of restrictions on Sailfish, even though there are many other things bordering Sailfish. So they were certainly concerned about the impact of those two properties on Sailfish. So to be specific on it, item E1C in the ROD basically increases the required buffer from 15 feet to 35 feet. We saw that mentioned on one of the slides also on that. Item D4 of the riverfront district provides a statement that says minimize traffic to the maximum extent possible using interior drives. Well, as I got a response from the staff, they're also only doing one driveway instead of they could do four on a commercial property. However, the big kicker one is that in item E2F, it specifically addresses access via Sailfish. It says the application shall also provide for permanent features to channel motor vehicle traffic movements within or around the proposed development to points where such traffic may enter or leave the development without adversely impacting Sailfish. Now, in the previous, they'd already basically discussed that you can't do...
Can you wrap it up?
Well, okay, real quickly. Basically, they say, I mean, to me, that statement says you cannot go through Sailfish. You've already said you can minimize traffic. This one is more specific for the specific point that they're saying you can't go through Sailfish. You have to go around it through other ways. One other condition I wanted to bring up real quickly is the fact that if you go on Sailfish and look at their property, all of the underbrush has been stripped away. They basically committed in their land use or their plan to basically that it says specifically that they have to keep anything except for what I'm saying is they're in my opinion, a zoning violation that needs to be investigated, that they wiped away all the undergrowth, and it says that they have to maintain that undergrowth in that 35-foot, unless it's not native to Florida, basically, and stuff on it. And they've completely wiped it away by its complete exposure into the entire site, which, again, is against another one of the violations. But I would request that the town look at that violation because it completely changes the character of Sailfish. And if you go back and look at Google Maps, if you do a street view, you can see what it looked like before its current condition.
Mr. Comfort, thank you very much, and I also appreciate all of the effort you put into all the correspondence. I know the staff spent considerable time responding, but I thank you for your effort with what you did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to speak? Because what I would like to do now, if that's everybody, is that I would like to close the public portion right now. And what we can do is I would go back, well, I'm not sure where to start. We could start with Mr. Bullard, if you would like to respond to that, if you're comfortable, and see if we can cover all of those questions. I'm not sure, but we'll try.
I'll try. The long history with Mr. Bullard. I was the planning manager for Daytona Beach, and I really loved it when he submitted his plans completely in metric. And when I complained to him about that, he produced federal regulations that told me I could not reject his plans because of the fact they were in metric. So like I said, Bob and I have a history. He asked about submerged land lease. Yes. The answer to that question is yes. Will there be fire hydrants on the property? The answer is yes. Will there be picnics? No. Will there be food trucks? No. Will food boats come up? Well, food boat, certainly that's not something that we'll desire or encourage. Now, might somebody come up in a food boat? They may. They'll be directed to not do that in the future. Will there be electric? Yes. Yeah, there will be surveillance of the property electronically 24 hours a day. In addition, my clients own Down the Hatch and Sea Love. There's always a lot of activity there on site. So there will be a lot of eyes on the property. Yes, if you there will be 24-hour access through the gate for people who own the boats. There'll be no fuel provide. There'll be no provisions for fuel. We'll use life rings, and you know, but I can't read my note about your last question. Just says boats question mark. So,
Mr. Buller, did you want to come back and help him with the question? But I think you got all. I mean, you went down my list.
Yeah.
With a lot. The big question is,
in the mic, please.
Big question is, what if all hell breaks loose with a storm? What's the plan for stabilizing
okay.
all this?
Okay, thank you. That's fine, Mr. Buller.
Okay, just so you know, part of the business operation of Sea Love, they have a significant amount of upland, so they actually have contracts with people with large boats that are very often brought to Sea Love, lifted out, and placed on the uplands during storm events, and people pay for that. That's a revenue stream associated with Sea Love.
Okay, very good. I think you got them all. Do you have anything else?
Do you need me to respond to anything?
Well, I'm going to actually, I think the next one from Mark dealt more with our police department.
The permit system, I think, that you guys are going to establish, I think will, if you do decide to go forward, I think will address that issue.
That would be my understanding. Is there anything that either the police chief or Mike would like to address just in terms of the parking, as far as is there legal parking in front of his house, and what can we do about parking on Ocean Way if things become a bit untenable? Does anyone?
Would you like to address that, Chief?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Jeff Glazier, Ponce Inlet Police Department. I think for that specific question, in order to stop it from happening in the first place, I think the residential parking permit that we're researching now is probably a good way to move forward with that. But in terms of, let's say that doesn't happen yet or the marina opens before that's ready, then we would just treat it like any other of our town streets. If there's a vehicle parked illegally, we can ticket it and we can tow it.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you. And then we had Sharon Lemieux. The two concerns, the archaeological mound to protect it at all costs. Maybe you could address that issue.
Okay. One thing I want to be absolutely clear about is that it is not a burial ground. As I indicated, I've been doing this for years in Volusia County. I am aware of sites that our clients have developed that did contain burial grounds. I actually had to sign documents that indicated that I'm not allowed to let anybody know where those burial grounds are in order to protect them from grave robbers, because there are people who are very interested in knowing the locations of any Indian burial grounds so that they can obtain the remains. So I just categorically, this is a midden mound, shell mound. there are protections on the site. There's a whole process that you do have to go through in order to impact the mound itself. There's no present plans to do that. We are required, because we are going to be doing work in close proximity to that mound during construction, we will have there's a list of state certified archaeologists that monitor these kind of activities. We're going to be required to select somebody from that state list, and they will be paid to be there on site, and their entire job will be to observe what is going on, and then if anything is found of significance, they're going to stop everything any of the construction that occurs on site, and then there will be additional arrangements that might be made to protect or further study that information. Just so you know, there is a report that Senior Records that does indicate that this property, the site itself as a whole is significant. None of what was actually found on the site in of itself was extremely significant. A lot of pieces of broken pottery shards. If at some point in the future the applicant decided that they wanted to do further development that would impact the mound, they'd have to go through a phase three archaeological assessment, which essentially is a full archaeological dig, right? And that would be you would then go in and excavate the mound and find out what's in it, and anything in it that was of significance would get preserved, and essentially all that gets taken away. In terms of the material that were there, if during either the phase one or phase two, anything that had been found that was significant, you'd be able to get a phase three done for you for free. Right? If you find something of significant interest, there are museums all over the state and archaeologists who will get grants, and they'll come in and they will excavate and preserve those items for you. But nothing of that significant was found that anybody was super excited about approaching and wanting to excavate that mound in order to find and discover things that they thought would be of interest to a museum or to a university. So
thank you.
Any of that stuff would happen on.
And the second part of Sharon's question was how do you intend to restore to the original sailfish?
Yeah, the contractor that gets hired to do the work is going to have to come in beforehand, and they're going to have to camera, all the offsite, public ownership. Right. I mean, we're going to bring stuff down Beach Street as well, right? And all the notes associated with our plans. We're going to be required to restore, any public, any damage that is done. So there'll be photographs taken. There'll be inspectors on site, and they will then be required to, restore the base, bring in shell. So it will have to be put into a condition post-construction that's accepted by the town employees.
Thank you, Mark. And this is for, I'm not sure if it's for Patty or Mike or even Cliff. Why can we not compel them to go down Front Street? That is Ms. Richards, essentially. I think I'm paraphrasing properly. They have a right to access their property, but maybe not where they wish to access. Who would like, can somebody address that?
Yeah, I can attempt to. I mean, it's really just like you said. They have a right of access off of Sailfish. Yeah, I mean, there are different ways that this could be designed. Those have been offered to the applicant, but at the end of the day, we did not feel as staff that the code could specifically require that, especially a crossing property that has a different zoning district. I mean, there are ways to do it, but they chose not to do that. And as a practical matter, you also have the shell mound, that's sitting on the north half of that property.
The mound.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So let me add to this. First of all, Front Street does not extend to the southern end of the MF2 property. So the right-of-way associated with Front Street comes down and terminates north of this property. The only public street that this property has frontage on is Sailfish. Now, your land development code, because all these properties are separate parcels, treats each of these properties as completely separate entities. We have, even though the applicant owns the property to the north, we have setbacks from those from the side from each of the property lines associated with the B2 property. If you recall, remember when Patty showed the landscaping plan and buffering, and she pointed to we've required screening to occur on the north of this property to a residential property. That property is that we're required to screen to is actually owned by the property owner. So he's been required to provide a residential buffer against his own residential property as if it was owned by anybody else. And what staff pointed out to us when we indicated that seemed like an unnecessary expense to us, saying there's absolutely nothing that would prohibit your client from selling those off. And so we want to make sure that that buffer is in place. So all of these things are treated as separate, independent parcels. Some point in the future, they could be combined. They could be part of a comprehensive development plan, but they are not now. And your code requires us to treat them as separate, independent parcels. And the only legal access the B2 property has is Sailfish, and I have documents in writing that tell us the only thing that we can bring across the MF2 property to serve the B2 property are utilities. All right, okay. So,
thank you. And the last one, Gary Comfort, I'm not sure if you wish to address anything that our last person said. I know that many of the points raised were already raised, and the council has had an opportunity to look at his questions and also the responses of the staff. So I'm not sure if you wish to say anything. That's
I'll give it a try. Perhaps the person who is best able to do so might be the town attorney. Well, but you heard him talk about analyzing the codes and resolutions and ordinances. So you have any reference things that were done by resolution and things that were done by ordinance. The land development code is done by ordinances. The derivation, you guys do resolutions all the time, so maybe I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but you look at things that are, when you think about resolutions and you think about ordinances, resolutions are things that you should do or you should consider. Ordinances are things that you shall do, right? So, so we need to be cognizant of that. So these are, and those are just even the derivation of those words. So think about resolve versus order. A resolution. You're resolved to do something. Resolution, order, ordinance. That's the actual derivation of those words. In addition, he's quoting portions of the code that reference those resolutions. The portions of the code that he referenced were intent and purposes sections of the code. That's not where you contain things that are mandatory. Again, those were referenced in the intent and purpose of the section of the ROD. In addition, I think the plain language of that portion of the code is letting you know that these roads are designated in those resolutions. So I think that was the purpose of the references. Those things were references to let you know that there are two documents out there to let you know that those properties have designations that are special. But if you're going to deny somebody all access to the property, you don't bury it in a resolution that you've referenced in an intent and purpose section of your land development code. You put it in the plain language of the ordinance, and you say you can't access Sailfish.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to comment? No? No. Okay. Now, this is where we are. Has both parties provided us with absolutely everything that you plan on doing? I believe so. Yes. Okay. So we've concluded the public comment. We are now at a place where each council member, I want to make sure that all of your questions of the parties have been answered. Is everybody satisfied with all the information that you have at this time? Okay. So we are the trier of fact, and it is time for us to begin weighing the evidence. What I would like to do to begin is ask that each council member please let us know whether you believe the criteria has been met, whether you have any doubts or reasons to believe that any of the criteria has not been met. And we may speak back and forth, all right? And so at the end of the discussion, there will be a motion made, either finding the criteria's been met or something's lacking. So we have a job to do, and can we begin it, and who would like to begin?
And I'll start.
Start.
No more questions, and I do feel like that all the criteria that the town requires has been met.
Okay.
Thank you.
I suspect that most of the criteria has been addressed properly. Something that just popped up in this last comment from this gentleman, with regards to M2 property not having direct access to Front Street, you're saying that Front Street ends prior to the property line of M2?
The B2 property doesn't have to be. The M2 has Front Street.
I understand.
But it terminates before the southern. Sorry, I know I need to come to the microphone. I don't want to get yelled at.
Sorry. Front Street terminates before the southern end of the MF2 property, so it doesn't provide connection. It's not the southern terminus of Front Street is not coterminus with the north line
of
the B2 property.
Okay. So my question then for us to consider is. Is it possible? Do we have the ingredients to do a resolution to allow that property to be accessed for the benefit of the developer?
May I turn to the attorney at this moment?
You know where I'm going with this, Craig.
No.
Okay,
and here's why. You're making an assumption that you can, by resolution, allow a road to be utilized across somebody else's property. Now, in this case, there is no somebody else. It's presumed to be a conglomerate that's owned by all the same party, but they're separate parcels. And so unless they could create, perhaps, if they chose to, but I don't know what their intentions are, whether they plan to sell off parcels or have that freedom to sell off parcels separately. And so you cannot impose upon them that, oh, they will need to provide an easement across this property to the other property. That you can't do.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything else? Joe?
No, that's it.
Well, having said that, are you of the opinion that all the criteria has been met?
I think most of it has been met. What I guess, having lived in town for 30 years, and look at the long-term impact here. And while this is, I believe, in my heart, just one phase of a long-term development that the Johnson family is anticipating, or maybe planning, I shouldn't say anticipating, this property is ripe for future development to include things like restaurants, hotels, repairs, and so forth. So I get hung up on this Front Street extension, because eventually, if that becomes the case down there, it's going to have to be extended. And why should we go through the problem of upsetting the residents on the adjacent streets to Sailfish, Ocean Way, and so forth, when we could really ask the developer to come back and reconsider looking at the option of Front Street? He owns the adjacent properties, and someday it's going to be developed.
Now, may I circle back for you? We have an application in front of us with specific criteria, and the real question for us to decide today is whether each of the criteria has been met in this final development plan, not what they may do. We don't know what could happen in the future. What if they were to even sell that piece of property that's, you know, I mean, right now they own it, but we don't know. So I think it's incumbent upon us to do what we've been instructed to do. We have to weigh the evidence that's in front of us and apply that evidence to the criteria that is in our land use, you know, development code. So what I'm trying to get to find out from you, Joe, is that is there something that you think that they have not met the requirement with what has been presented to us?
No, I've gone through this material for 2 weeks.
We do hear you, and we've heard our residents. We have heard them loud and clear, and we've been working on other things for the larger issue of the impact of what's going on in this town in terms of traffic flow all around. So, okay, thank you, Joe. Bill?
Well, before I preface, I want to make a statement. We're concerned about 17 parking spaces. For us that have been here as long as Joe, the 20 and 30 years, remember the building permit that was allowed in 2004 on that property. Just go back and look at that. I know Mr. Comfort would know it because he wasn't right here then, but his father was. And go back and look and see what there. They have met all the criteria, and they have been willing to accept the 7 recommendations. So my answer to that is yes, but I know the concern of Ocean Way and the drive-in on Ocean Way, but go back and look at the permit that was allowed for this area in 2004 that expired and wasn't followed through for. It is significant, and what we're getting today is 1,000 times better than what was presented in 2004.
Thank you, Bill. Gary?
I agree with the planning board and the staff. The criteria has been met.
And I agree as well that the criteria has been met. And as such, if we don't need further discussion, we've all worked hard at this. We've had our packets for quite some time. What I do want to say is that I'm just so appreciative of our staff answering all of the residents' questions, because you actually made our job a lot easier up here, because they were our questions too, so many of them. They were our questions, and we're very appreciative of having a public that spent so much of their time and effort on it. So I will entertain a motion unless someone wants, is someone prepared to make the motion?
Yeah, I make a motion to approve the proposed Sailfish Marina final development plan subject to the conditions provided by staff, including the 7 recommendations.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Was that me?
Yes.
Yes. I couldn't hear. I'm sorry,
Mayor
Stephanie.
Smith?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. I want to thank the applicant. I want to thank our staff for all of your hard work, and especially I want to thank the public. I think that you worked very hard on this with us. Is there anything you wish to say, Mark? Did you want to?
I just want to say thank you very much. It's been a journey, and we're happy to have gotten to this point. Thank you very much. I want to thank you guys. I want to thank staff, and we're going to try to be as good neighbors as we possibly can.
We thank you for that. Thank you very much. It is 10 to 5. We have a bit more to go in our agenda. Is there anybody who's going to ask me for a five-minute break?
Only to get my jacket. I'm freezing.
You want your jacket?
No, I'm not going to wrap it.
Okay, because if...
She's going to raise the ear.
You need to raise the ear. Okay, then we'll just continue because we don't have that much more, but just enough.
You got the mark.
Oh.
Jacket.
Okay. We are down to the new 11A resolution 2024-05, updating the town's fee schedule. Cliff, would you please read? Agenda item 10. I apologize. Is public hearings non-quasi-judicial matters? This is ordinance 2024-01. It is the second reading, amendments to Beach addressing requirements. Cliff? Would you please read that by title only?
Yes, Mayor. Ordinance 2024-01, read by title only. An ordinance of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, amending Chapter 18 of the Ponce Inlet Code of Ordinances relating to posting of address numbers for properties adjacent to the Atlantic Ocean, amending Section 18.4, posting of addresses, to Chapter 18, Buildings and Building Regulations, requiring the posting of address numbers on the beachfront properties that are visible from the adjacent beach, providing for enforcement, providing for codification, providing for severability, providing for conflicts, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, Cliff. Mike?
There have not been any changes to this ordinance since first reading, so we're still recommending approval.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Does anyone have any questions?
I did have one, and I did discuss this with Michael yesterday in our meeting, but if you go over to Section 5, amending the police department fees, and...
I had made a mistake. No, 10A. I had skipped...
My bad.
10A is the beach... Oh. The beach address. This gotcha. Was second reading. I apologize.
Sorry.
That was my fault there.
I was on that.
Never okay, mind. So you're good,
with that.
You're
yes.
good with that. Anyone have any questions of Mike or anyone? Okay, anyone in the audience have any questions? Okay, Robert, come on up.
Robert Bullard, 4802 South Peninsula Drive. Arrow by the Sea in New Smyrna Beach has the same address on South Atlantic Avenue as East Wind Condominium in Ponce Inlet. Now, if we're looking at this, the realm of possibility, somebody could get confused and end up down there when they should be coming to Ponce Inlet, I suggest we put PI behind every address posted in Ponce Inlet, and ask our brethren in New Smyrna Beach to put NSB on theirs. Thank you.
Robert, thank you. I did receive that request of yours in writing, and I forwarded it to our manager. I did. It has been discussed, and my understanding is that at the moment it has not made its way into the resolution or in the ordinance. I don't know if anybody wishes, but the question became, I believe, Mike, is it fair to say, was it something that public safety felt the need to do?
Right. This is ultimately an ordinance dealing with public safety, so we defer to our public safety director and how that these kinds of things also interrelate with the county's emergency 911 system. So, I mean, there didn't seem to be anything from my discussions with staff that this would really be of any kind of benefit.
Okay. So I'm suggesting we not add it based upon the opinion of public safety. So having said that, does anyone in the public wish, other than Mr. Bullard, is there anybody else who wishes to speak? Okay. Seeing none, entertain a motion.
I'll begin.
Yeah, you will.
I make a motion to approve the proposed ordinance 2024-01, updating Code of Ordinance Chapter 18, Buildings and Buildings Regulations, Section 18.4, Posting of Addresses.
Second. We have a motion and a second. A roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Mayor Peretzky?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
And it's a good thing I just my sign.
Yeah. And now we're at 11A, which is Resolution 2024-05, updating the town's fee schedule. Cliff, if you could read that by title only, please.
Yes, Mayor. Resolution 2024-05, read by title only, a resolution of the Town Council of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Volusia County, Florida, amending portions of Appendix A, Fees, Rates, and Charges of the Town Code of Ordinances, Part 2, Buildings and Building Regulations, Part 10, Water Service, Part 15, Planning, Development, and Code Enforcement Fees, Part 16, Fire Department Fees, Part 17, Police Department Fees, and Part 20, Parks and Special Events, providing for conflicting resolutions, providing for severability, providing for an effective date, and thank God I still know how to read Roman numerals.
Thank you. And I see that we have our Public Safety Director, Dan Scales, ready to present to us.
Good. I think it's afternoon by now, right?
Yes.
Evening? It's
no,
evening.
Afternoon.
Not yet, 5 minutes.
That's okay. We'll get there. Good afternoon, Mayor, members of Council. Resolution 2024-5 is really a comprehensive review of all the town's fees. I think the last time we did one like this was back in 2021. We've done some since then, but those have been specific to specific areas in the Code of Ordinances. This one really does represent a pretty significant review and change. Town staff was tasked with looking at all their fees and making a recommendation to adjust up or down based on actual quantifiable qualifications, if you will, actual nexuses for those changes. The staff report was provided to you that went over all of the changes and gave you a brief description of what the nexuses were and why they were changed. If you don't mind, I'd like to just cover a few that you may be interested in. The most significant number of changes really had to do with the water service. And as you know, we did change the water rates a few months back. And you might be asking yourself, well, why don't the water rates that people pay every month cover these other fees that we're changing here this evening, or recommending changing this evening? The fees that we are looking at here really are customer-specific services. They're not services that we do every day. They're not services that are part of normal daily water system operations. The monthly charge really pays for water purchase and normal water system operations. So what you see here are additions and modifications to those types of fees. We haven't changed a lot of those fees in a number of years. And as costs have gone up with personnel expenses and equipment expenses, we have not kept pace with those expenses. So this is making that correction. And hope the town will not lose any money now when we provide these services. And those fees represented industry standard, and basically what Port Orange is charging for the same service. So we're just following suit with Port Orange. I know there may be a question on, we had a discussion, there was a question on late fees. And we charge residents late fees. And it's a really good thought. If somebody's having difficulty paying a water bill, would they have difficulty paying a late fee? And that's a legitimate question. I will tell you that the town does have accommodations in place, that we will work with an individual, put them on a payment plan. As long as they pay the payment plan, we will waive the late fees. If someone gets with the town and tells us what happened, a lot of times it's just, you know, somebody overlooks paying a bill. The town has a program to accommodate those, so we don't put anybody in a bad position. So we're very cognizant of that, and I appreciate that question. And we average about 80 to 90 late fees a month on average. So, but we still have a lot of water customers. That's not too bad. It's not too bad. So I thought you might be interested in that. Additionally, I just want to point out, I think Councilmember White was going to ask about the excessive false alarm section. Is that a safe assumption?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I did want to just mention to you all that, and it's not written here, and staff recommends that we add this to this section, is what really defines a excessive or false alarm. That is identified in a different section of our code. And an excessive alarm is basically any alarm beyond three alarms in a six-month period.